From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch coming up on this Wednesday edition. In the wake of the Supreme Court decision redefining the word sex, Senate Democrats are trying to take advantage of the shell shock and pass even further reaching legislation called the Equality Act. Utah Senator Mike Lee will be here on that and the flawed court decision that put us here. And with the U.S. focus on a host of domestic troubles, Turkey is on the move, militarily hitting the Yazidis and moving troops into northern Iraq to attack the Kurds. Michael Rubin, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, is here with more on that story. And what is in the president's executive order on policing that he signed yesterday? The executive director of the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council, Scott Turner, will be with us a little bit later with the details. And how should we respond to the actions of the Supreme Court? I'll talk about that later on the program. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. A lot to cover today. In fact, a little bit later, we're going to have a giveaway going into Father's Day. General Boykin out with a new book called Man to Man. It's the centerpiece of our Stand Courageous Men's conferences. And yes, that's biological men. We make no bones about that. We are speaking to men in that book, and we're going to give away some copies of that a little bit later, so stay tuned for that. Also, standing by today to take your phone calls. We have members of our team as we come to the end of the fiscal year. We've got some generous donors that have put forward a $1 million challenge match that will effectively double everything that you give. So we got folks standing by to take your call. If you haven't done that this week, I encourage you to do so today. 800-225-4008. 800-225-4008. I've said before, and I'm going to talk about it later in the program, but you'll never see a white flag flying in front of the FRC headquarters. I don't care. Court decision, no court decision, legislative action, no legislative action. The militant left does not matter. We will not surrender one inch of ground when it comes to the truth. I'm going to talk more about that later. But first, it's just a shocking decision by the Supreme Court, a 6-3 ruling on Monday in the Bostock case, in which the court effectively redefined the word sex by a 6-3 majority. Now, what are the implications for this regarding religious liberty? Are churches now at risk? Religious organizations, Christian businesses? How far reaching is this decision? Joining me now to answer these questions, former clerk for Justice Alito and a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Utah Senator Mike Lee. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Your reactions to the Supreme Court's decision that was handed down Monday, redefining the term sex?
Well, it's disappointing. I disagree with it. You know, Justice Gorsuch took a meat cleaver to the issue of how the Civil Rights Act of 1964 should apply to LGBT individuals. And now, as a result of taking a meat cleaver to this issue, it's resulted in a lot of blood spilling everywhere, and metaphorically speaking, of course, and now we're working on a legislative solution to try to figure out how to clean up the mess. But the biggest problem with it was that he made a legislative determination. He effectively rewrote the law. And when you rewrite the law through a judicial opinion, that's a very crude way in which to operate. It's not precise, and it leaves completely undecided all sorts of questions regarding the permutations of this and the implications, some of which you referred to, for religious institutions, churches, church-owned enterprises, and religious individuals and proprietors. These questions have to be answered, and yet the court didn't bother to answer any of them.
But the court did acknowledge that this decision would create further cases. I mean, they essentially said this decision is going to make a mess, but we leave that for another day.
Right. And unfortunately, what that really means is we're going to leave that for a lot of other days. As I was commenting to someone the other day, I'm a third-generation lawyer. I've got two sons in law school who are going to become fourth-generation lawyers. I'm convinced that not only my children, but my grandchildren's generation will still not see the end of litigation resulting from the Bostock decision. Because when you take this kind of a meat cleaver to federal law, it's going to take not just years, but decades to iron out all the details, and there are going to be some real heartbreaking stories in the wake of it.
I want to go back. As a member of the Judiciary Committee, your committee is the one that hears the judicial confirmation or that goes through the judicial confirmation process for the nominees. I have a clip of Judge Gorsuch at the time, now Justice Gorsuch, discussing this very thing. Play clip number one, please.
Justice Scalia was a mentor, too. He reminded us that words matter, that the judge's job is to follow the words that are in the law, not replace them with those that aren't.
A true statement?
It's a true statement. I wish he had followed it. I wish I could have put that on record and then played it on a continuous loop in his office ever since we made the decision to confirm him. Look, this sort of ruling was not what we had in mind when we confirmed Neil Gorsuch. This is not what we had in mind when we heard a judge speak passionately and see his Tenth Circuit opinions, of which there were many, that echoed that same sentiment, that the judge's job is not to remake the law. It's not to legislate. It's to decide what the law as enacted actually says and what the public understanding of it was at the time of its enactment.
So, Senator Lee, did he deceive the committee when he sat there and made that statement?
It's not my place to say whether he deceived. I can't get into another man's head. I can't know the thoughts and intentions of another human being, whether a jurist or otherwise. And so that's between him and his maker to decide whether or not that was a deceitful statement at the time. What I can say is what I understood from that is not consistent with the opinion that he issued yesterday. Now, the opinion he issued day before yesterday tries to use the trappings of textualism, which is just a fancy word for saying we as judges should interpret the law based on what it says and based on its original public meaning at the time of its enactment. So I can't know what he subjectively meant, but what I do know is that he didn't follow the textualism he was purporting to apply.
Well, certainly. I mean, can you trust a man to define textualism who cannot define sex?
Yeah, and who gets so wrapped around the axle while purporting to apply textualist rules gets so wrapped around the axle that he comes up with an interpretation of it that is tortured, that's internally inconsistent, and that is utterly at odds with the contemporaneous public understanding of this law at the time it was enacted in 1964.
So, Senator Lee, I mean, I've known you for a long time, and you have been one of the most consistent voices on textualism, on the Constitution, on upholding it. You've written on it. You've spoken on it. Let me just be very blunt. This is demoralizing to a lot of people who were hoping that the court would return to its constitutional boundaries and not legislate as they did on Monday in handing down this decision. What is the way forward from here?
My hope, and frankly my expectation, but definitely my hope, is that this might be an aberration for Justice Neil Gorsuch, and to a degree for Chief Justice John Roberts. I'm deeply disappointed in both of them from issuing this decision. I think it's wrong. I understand how they got there because they explained publicly how they got there. The problem is how they got there simply isn't satisfying. It's not compelling that's actually what the words mean. I can hope only that this will be an aberration and not an ordinary course of business for them. As my late father used to say, everyone's entitled to a mulligan now and then. Now, this one's a big one. This is a big mulligan. But I don't know what other choice we have here. One of the important things to keep in mind, Tony, is that this is why we've got to continue the effort to bring textualist originalist judges onto the bench, including onto the Supreme Court. The American legal education system and the American legal profession and our society doesn't automatically churn out conservative thinkers,
yes,
or textualists.
That's true. Yes.
And so the default is for them to be liberal and purposivist, meaning an outcome-oriented sort of policy-making type of thinkers. That's one of the reasons why this battle is so important, because even the people who purport to be with us sometimes are not.
Well, in my experience, Senator, is that in the time, almost 20 years that I've been in this process, that, you know, you're absolutely right. The default is not what we want. But we've got to go beyond just taking people kind of at their word. I think we've got to begin looking for records. We've got to be looking for those solid stances on those positions of being constitutionalists. And we've been told so many times by different administrations, oh, they're going to be right, even though they have no record, because it's too hard to fight for someone with a record.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's such a big mistake when these vacancies do occur for us to go with an easy path to go towards somebody without a record. Now, in the case of Gorsuch, he had a record, and I spent an ungodly amount of time going through every opinion I could get my hands on. He had a decade's worth of good jurisprudence. I didn't find a real horrible one among them. And so this one took us out of left field, but you're exactly right, Tony. This is all the more reason for us when these vacancies occur. We cannot take chances. Yeah. There's too much on the line. There's too much they can mess with. When they can remake our law in their own image, when they can supplant the role of the legislative branch with the stroke of a judicial pen, that is lawlessness. We can't allow that to happen. We cannot take chances anymore. Never again.
Senator, before I let you go, this in the wake of what I call shell shock, because people never expected this, your Democratic colleagues are trying to fast track a piece of legislation which would go even further than this court decision, which is the Equality Act, H.R. 5, which passed the House, reportedly could be voted on in the Senate or moved forward as early as tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, that's not going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is that this is a sort of Orwellian name that they've attached to this legislation. It's one of the favorite tricks of the left is to come up with legislation that has a title that sounds nice and doesn't sound at all menacing. If you came up with a bill that was called the Let's Protect Cute Puppies and Kittens Act, nobody's going to want to oppose that because the title sounds nice. Equality Act sounds nice until you stop and examine what it would actually do, what it would do to religious institutions. The fact that this would openly threaten religious institutions and individuals throughout America who dare have divergent views, who dare act in conformity to their religious beliefs, this would end up having a punishing effect on them, to say nothing of what it would do to women's athletics, what it would do to girls' and women's locker rooms and restrooms in colleges and in public places. This is scary.
Yes. Well, Senator Mike Lee, I want to thank you for being one of the staunchest defenders of the First Amendment on Capitol Hill. And I want to thank you for joining us today and providing some insight.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Senator Mike Lee of Utah. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I'm going to have more to say about the Bostock decision a little bit later and how we should respond. Where do we go from here? As I've heard from a lot of folks, I've heard more in the last couple of days about this than, you know, what I heard 3 months in the coronavirus or even in the riots that were erupting across the nation. This has people shook, and we're going to talk about it. But coming up next, Turkey moving troops into northern Iraq. We're going to talk with resident scholar of the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Rubin, next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as I promised at the beginning of the program, our Executive Vice President, my dear friend, General Jerry Boykin, has written a new book called Man to Man. In fact, I have written the foreword to the book. And this is really the backbone of our Stand Courageous Men's conferences we're doing around the country. We're picking them back up in just a few weeks. We took a coronavirus break. But because it's Father's Day this Sunday, to celebrate the men in your life, we're giving away 50 copies of General Boykin's newly released book, Man to Man. It's a great gift for you to give to your father, your brothers, your sons, any man in your life. To enter, if you're one of our first 50, you're going to get a free copy. Go to TonyPerkins.com and click on the Man to Man graphic, or you can text the word FIRST. First, that's FIRST, to the number 51555. That's 51555. Text the word FIRST. If you're among the first 50, you're going to get a copy of General Boykin's new book, Man to Man. It's a great book. Okay. Turkey has airlifted troops into northern Iraq for a cross-border ground operation against Turkey's against the Kurds. The defense minister in Ankara said the offensive was launched following intense artillery fire into the area. Now, there have also been attacks against Yazidis on Mount Sinjar. These are the folks that are still on the mountain. They were targeted for genocide. And now the Turks have been targeting them. They are aggressive. And I think a part of this is the distraction, the opening that it has provided for them with all that's happening, the coronavirus, what's happening here domestically. Join me now to talk more about this. Resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Rubin. He also testified recently before the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom on the needs for religious liberty in northeast Syria. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tony.
Okay, what are the Turks doing? What's going on?
Well, there's two different operations here. Where they're crossing the border and putting in their ground troops is an area of rugged terrain which the PKK, the Kurdish Workers Party, which has led an insurgency in Turkey for the past 30-plus years, is based. And this is an operation which happens from time to time, although, of course, the Iraqis are unhappy about this because it's a violation of their sovereignty. And even though the Turks will label all Kurds and the PKK insurgent group as terrorists, it's not clear that the PKK has actually taken any action against Turkey recently. Turkey seems to be just continuing its long campaign of ethnic cleansing against the Kurds. But the real problem and what's really troubling is what the Turks are doing on Mount Sinjar. Now, it's important to understand, Tony, when we talk about Mount Sinjar, it's not a little mountain. It's a large mountain that is about 50 miles long. And so you drive along valleys on either side of it, and on the mountain itself is where all these Yazidis live, and some of them weathered the Islamic State, but many others are the refugees, the women, the girls who have been returning from Syria, liberated from the Islamic State. They're trying to get their life together, and it's not clear why the Turks are insisting on bombarding them. It really undercuts the development, and it raises questions about whether Turkey is waging counterterrorism, and it's clear they're not, or whether they're pursuing a religious agenda, an intolerant religious agenda.
Now, Michael, many of these Yazidis on Mount Sinjar are in basically refugee camps. I mean, they're still in the recovery process from, as you pointed out, what ISIS did. And so this is traumatizing to them. I mean, they have no idea. They're isolated. I mean, we have a NATO ally. Turkey is a NATO ally. Is NATO saying anything about this?
You know, NATO isn't. NATO is being disturbingly quiet. When I was in Sinjar last, several months ago, right before the coronavirus hit, it was important that we not be there at night because that's when the Turkish warplanes came. And I mean, it wasn't just a matter of rebuilding houses, Tony. It's a matter of, this is an agricultural area. It's a matter of planting crops. And whenever the crops would grow, the Turks would bomb them and they would burn. So it is a deeply troubling scenario.
So, Michael, what should be the United States, we've got our hands full right now. I mean, you know, the coronavirus, as you said, that stopped all travel. I mean, even the travels that USURF was taking, we've not gone anywhere. I came back from Sudan right as the outbreak was beginning. And so there's a bit of isolation taking place in terms of being able to go on the ground and see these things. But we're getting these news reports. What should the United States, what should our posture be here?
Well, Tony, we know from past precedent, from the time of, for example, when Pastor Brunson was held hostage inside Turkey, that if the U.S. government is willing to impose economic sanctions, eventually Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, will back down. It's essential that we actually leverage economic pressure. The other thing to keep in mind is many of the Yazidi I talked with said they have proof of life of girls and women who were seized by the Islamic State who are still in areas under Turkish control. It's essential that those economic sanctions also compel the release of those Yazidi slaves. It's important to have religious freedom in the Middle East.
Absolutely, and especially as you testified on Northeast Syria. Michael Rubin, one final question for you. Just is what's the bigger agenda here for Turkey? Is this just, as you said, they occasionally make these raids into northern Iraq? Is there something bigger at play here?
There's two things. First of all, Turkey under Recep Tayyip Erdogan has talked about revising the borders it's had for the past 100 years, and that's upsetting all the neighboring states. But there's also a religious agenda at play. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, essentially comes from a Muslim Brotherhood background, and he's seeking to impose his religion and his Islamism not only on Turkey's Shiites and not only on Turkey's Christians, but also the Yazidis as well. And it's important to nip this process in the bud.
All right. Michael Rubin, thank you so much for joining us today. Very, very insightful.
Thank you.
Michael Rubin, resident scholar of the American Enterprise Institute. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right. Yesterday, the president signed an executive order on policing, providing best practices to address the issue of police brutality. He got the jump on it. You know, Congress is saying they're working on it, but, you know, an act of Congress takes forever. The president got out front. Of course, he's being criticized. What's new? We're going to talk with Scott Turner next, Executive Director of the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council. He's going to tell us what exactly was in the executive order and how is it going to be implemented. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. As I mentioned at the top of the program, we're coming up to the end of the fiscal year, and the only way that Washington Watch is heard on, we're closing in on 400 stations across the country. The only way that happens is because of partners like you that stand with us. We receive no government money, none, zero. In fact, just to be clear, when the PPP that we've talked about, the Paycheck Protection, we did not participate in that because we wanted to freely advocate for other nonprofits and churches, and we just didn't feel like that's where we needed to be. We represent you. We're your voice here in Washington, and we want the freedom to do that without anyone questioning what we do. And so we are totally dependent upon folks like you standing with us, and as we come to the end of our fiscal year, we have some generous donors that have put forward a $1 million challenge match, which essentially what you give will be doubled. So if you'll give us a call, I've got team members standing by to take your call. They'd love to talk with you. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Or you can go to TonyPerkins.com and make a contribution there. Also, I want to remind you, the first 50 who either go to TonyPerkins.com and click on the man-to-man emblem there will get a free copy of General Boykin's book, Man to Man. Or you can text the word FIRST to 51555. First 50 will get a free copy of General Boykin's Man to Man book. Yesterday, President Trump signed a policy, or rather a policing executive order. This sets in place best practices for law enforcement. It's another goal of reform that will set in place a system of accountability. It ties federal funds to departments that adopt these best practices and have outside accountability. This is to address the issue of excessive force. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, we've had a couple of cases. One is too many, but we've had a couple of cases in the last 3.5 years. We had many in the previous administration. This president is taking action. he's doing something about it. Here to talk about it, Executive Director of the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council, Scott Turner. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. Nice to be with you, Tony.
So, Scott, tell our listeners, what exactly will this executive order do?
So, in the executive order, and you alluded to a lot of what's in it, so you have, you know, it'll promote a close tie and relationship between law enforcement and the community, which is very important when you talk about community policing and increasing that relationship between the two. Also, the training of officers to deal with those that have mental illness or addiction or homelessness. As we know, that's been an issue through the years. So that type of training is addressed in the EO. And the use of excessive force, as you alluded to, it addresses that, and holding officers accountable as it pertains to chokehold and excessive use of force. Also, another one is the creation of a national database that attracts officers who've had offenses or who have had disciplinary action or criminal convictions or termination, so that they can't move from force to force freely, but there will be accountability and transparency. And then you mentioned the funding, the discretionary funding from the AG to high-performing law enforcement agencies. And lastly, the information sharing, you know, the sharing between police departments about officers who have used excessive force. And so, Tony, there's a lot of transparency and accountability for law enforcement inside of the EO.
Well, Scott, I commend the president for getting out front. As a former police officer, 10 years in law enforcement, I understand it's real. It happens. Yeah. I've seen it. In fact, I've called it out back when I was a police officer, and it cost me. But it's not the norm. It is the exception. But I applaud the president for getting out front on this issue. And I think more needs to be done. But I think I want to go back to a point you made about community policing, because I policed inner city. Part of my career, I was with the city police, and most of those residents wanted to see us there. They would come up to us. We'd have conversations, you know, when we were in the car in the neighborhoods, and they wanted us there. What's happened is, as barriers have been erected between the police and the community, this sense of isolationism has taken place, and in the absence of communication fear has gripped both sides, and there are some that have exploited this. So I think this is a great thing to bring the two sides together again.
Absolutely. And, Tony, thank you for your service, by the way. I meant to mention that before. I really appreciate all of your actual service to our country and the community. And it is, you know, that communication has been lost. And because of that, fear has set in. And, you know, fear paralyzes any man. And fear causes people to do things that are irrational. And so we have to get back to where policemen and community people, you know, be it grandmothers, be it young children, be it, you know, the working family, that when police come around, it's not a sense of fear, but it's a sense of security, you know, and a sense of community. I mean, man, I remember when I was a little kid, firemen and policemen were like our heroes, and we used to be able to sit in the fire trucks and sit in the police cars and look at things without being afraid, and that's what we have to get back to. And so this executive order addresses that, but that's going to be on, you know, personal responsibility on the community folks and the police officers that are patrolling the communities to take action in creating those relationships.
Yes, absolutely. It comes down to the local level. Scott Turner, always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
All right, Scott Turner, the executive director of the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council. He's all over the country doing some great stuff for the administration. You know, it does go back to those relationships, but there's got to be a foundation, and it's the issue of law and order. And you got to love the fact that there's rules, and you've got to abide by those rules. But when we begin to tear down the rules, and we began to create a sense of lawlessness, that's where this chaos creeps in. We're going to talk about that next. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Again, I want to remind you, we've got members of our team standing by. As we come down to the end of the fiscal year, we have some supporters that have put forward a $1 million challenge that whatever you give effectively will be doubled. And so as we come to the end of the year, we want to finish strong because we don't spend it if we don't have it. And in order for us to be your voice here on Capitol Hill, to be advocating for faith, family, and freedom, obviously we've got to have your support, your partnership. It's the only way we can do it. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008 to talk to one of our team members, or you can go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, I want to return to the Bostock case. In my view, this is the Roe v. Wade decision of religious liberty. It's significant. There's no putting a spin on this. I think, you know, Gorsuch, when I played that clip earlier, I think he was deceptive. Something happened because he clearly went 180 degrees from his own words that he should not replace the words of the law with their own words as judges. That's what they did. It's exactly what they did. Well, how should we respond? I'm telling you, I have heard from so many people. I've seen statements by leaders who, quite frankly, appear to be ready to throw in the towel. And you know what? I understand that. I've been at this process for, it's coming up to almost 30 years. And one of the issues that brought me into the political arena, allow me this opportunity just to kind of walk you through this as a believer. I'm often asked by other Christians, Tony, how do you do that? I mean, how do you maintain a sense of equilibrium and optimism given what you've seen, especially, you know, back during the Obama years? Let me give you a little history, personal history. You know, one of the issues that brought me into the political arena in the mid-1990s. I first ran for office in 1995, and I became kind of involved in the early 90s. It was a Louisiana Supreme Court case, interestingly enough. The Supreme Court ruled that the state's constitution, which banned gambling, did not ban gaming. Essentially, they redefined the term gambling, and they allowed gaming to take place. The riverboats, the casinos, they didn't call that gambling. They called it gaming. The Supreme Court did. And so allowed at one point for Louisiana to have more gambling, more types of gambling than Las Vegas. Well, I was shocked by this. I'd been a police officer, and, you know, I had enforced the law. And you have words mean things. And this was appalling, and it was appalling to the people of Louisiana. In fact, we, as a result of this court redefinition of the term, we had one of the largest FBI stings to that point in time. I think there may have been a bigger one now. But in the mid-1990s, one of the largest FBI stings, which ended up sending a number of people to jail. Eventually, they got our governor, former governor. Well, it is the same nonsense that we see now affirmed by the high court. Biological sex is determined by your chromosomes. Human beings normally have 23 pairs of chromosomes for a total of 46. 22 of these pairs look the same for male and female, but the 23rd pair, the sex chromosomes, differ between male and female. Females have two X chromosomes, and males have one X and one Y. That's science. It's just the way it is. Gender identity is 100% fictional construct with no basis in science, in biological reality. But the court played that game yesterday. So what do we do? This is, as I alluded to yesterday, this is lawlessness. The court is not a law unto itself. They can't just make stuff out of whole cloth. Now, they've tried it. That's what they did in Roe v. Wade. They found in the shadows of the Constitution this right to abortion. Look how well that's gone in 46 years. It's more of an issue today than it was then. Now, the majority in this case, in the Bostock case, admitted that the 1964 Civil Rights Act did not include gender identity. But they redefined the word sex anyway to include gender identity. Now, lawlessness. And we talked about that earlier with Senator Lee. You know, when we think of lawlessness, we think of the black hoodies of Antifa. Well, lawlessness is not just found in the black hoodies of Antifa. It's also found among the black robes of the justices. This is lawlessness. This unleashes lawlessness in our country. Because words have meaning, and we have to be able to rely upon these words and these actions. This is a statutory piece of statutory legislation passed by Congress, signed by the president in 1964, that provides protections for specific classes for employment purposes. It was never on the minds of people that this included the ability to, you know, declare your gender whatever you wanted it to be, and that would be protected. And the court essentially on Monday in the ruling, it acknowledged that they didn't think that. But however, they were going to do it anyway. Now, here's the risk, okay? A lot of people I've seen this say, well, you know, we've always been, it's the courts. If we just get the right Supreme Court justices on the courts, everything will be fine. Yes, I know. But we don't always get it right. And there's a temptation here to just retreat because discouragement sets in. And I was thinking about this morning. I actually thought about this in C.S. Lewis's book, Screwtape Letters. You remember, I don't know if you read that. It's a pretty interesting read, fictional read of what the demons may be doing to entice believers. But the elder demon is coaching the younger demon on how to trip up his patient. And he tells him to keep the man focused on himself and his present circumstances. And to do this, use discouragement. Don't let him think about eternal things. Because when our focus is on the current situation, it's easy to lose hope and be overwhelmed with discouragement, which leads to capitulation and retreat. and cowardice. We can't give in to that. I mean, it's a temptation. I go back to my time in the legislature fighting gambling. I was the you could Google it, might still be there. I was the lead voice against the gambling, and you know what? I lost most of the time. I would go down knowing I was going to lose because so many were basically bought and paid for by the gambling industry. But I fought. And I think, you know, in hindsight, I've had people say, you did contain it. I don't know. But I did what I had to do. I stood for what was true and what was right. Did I pay a price? I don't know. Probably. When I ran for the Senate, it was obviously an issue. I didn't get the business money. Didn't have the gamblers lining up behind me, obviously. But I stood for what was true, and people had to pay. They could not deny that they did not know. And as Christians, Jesus warned us that these difficult times would be coming. In fact, in Matthew chapter 24, when he talks about the kind of the end of times, he says, "You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled. For all of these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilence, and earthquakes in various places. All of these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold." The love of what? The love of God. The love of truth. We can't shrink back. In fact, as Jesus was talking to his disciples and praying for them over in John chapter 15 and 16, he closes out chapter 16 with these words, "These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world, you'll have tribulation. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." How do we maintain our outlook and difficult setbacks like this? I don't make any excuses. I think this is a teachable moment. I will never again take a nominee on face value. I don't care who tells me what. I want to see the record. And I think this will be a teachable moment for the administration. I certainly hope so. But we can't shrink back. We can't be fearful. We can't retreat. We need to have an eternal perspective. By standing for truth, even in the midst of great opposition, standing for truth, even when it's not in season, or maybe open season on the truth, what we do is we're a testimony to the truth. And recall what Jesus said, the truth will make you free. We're to testify to the truth. You know, we're not here to win an argument. We're here for something much bigger. We're not here to just win a Supreme Court case. We're here for something much bigger. We're here to be a testimony to the truth so that others might come to know it. It was nearly 100 years ago, at 95 to be exact, there was another court case. It was the state of Tennessee versus John Thomas Scopes. It's better known as the Scopes Monkey Trial. It was in Dayton, Tennessee. A teacher violated the law by teaching evolution. It was the focus of national attention, as it was at the same time the theological battle between Orthodox Christians, what were called fundamentalists, and the liberal mainline denominations who had jettisoned Scripture. All of that was unfolding. And so this was really the tip of the spear of this battle. Well, those who believed the Bible won the court case. But the liberal media, the elite, descended upon this and mocked the Christians, attacked them, and essentially sent them into the wilderness for about 50 years. They retreated. And look back during that time that they were in retreat, and the seeds of the moral and social chaos that is gripping our nation today were sown. Now, they weren't reaped until later, but they came. And it was because so many Christians left the public square, intimidated, fearful. We can't do that. We cannot retreat from our call to stand for truth. Now, I will tell you this. We've seen tremendous success on so many fronts in the last 3.5 years. Of course, our hope is not in government. Our hope is not in politicians. Our hope is not, as Scripture says, it's not in chariots, it's not in horses. We'll trust in the Lord. But that doesn't excuse us from being involved and being engaged in this world. We need to have an eternal perspective, but we need to be engaged here and now, knowing that, you know, we may not prevail in the political, we may not prevail in the cultural, but we will prevail ultimately when we stand upon truth and we stand in the power of the Lord. It's another aspect of this. How do we stand? I'm going to go back to, you know, really what is a life passage I close the show with every day, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 18, where, you know, we're to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Our strength is not to be in ourselves. We will never prevail in our own strength in this culture. And in fact, as the culture becomes even more hostile, the faint of heart will be overrun. And that's what Jesus said, that the love of many will grow cold because of the lawlessness. They'll be intimidated by it. There'll be cowardice will set in. Fear of man. We've got to be strong in the power of the Lord and in His might. We need to be fully equipped spiritually to stand, not to win a battle, not to win a debate, but to stand faithful for the truth so that others might come to know the truth. Ultimately, our goal is to share the transforming truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's why we advocate here at the Family Research Council for religious liberty, for your ability to live it out in the marketplace, to live it out as parents teaching it to your children, to the students in the schools, to be able to live out their faith as a testimony to the truth, so that others might come to know the truth and might have life and have it more abundantly. Folks, we can never give up. We can be disappointed. We can be discouraged. But our help, where does our help come from? Our help comes from the Lord, and we need to look to Him as a source of strength, our source of encouragement, just as David did at Ziklag. When all was lost, he encouraged himself in the Lord. Be encouraged. Be encouraged that God has entrusted us with this moment, one of the most difficult moments, I believe, in the history of man, but also one of the most promising, filled with opportunity and promise. If we'll stand firm for the truth of God. Until next time, I leave you with those words. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.